All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Daily Power Parsha Palooza. It is great to have you all here, and it is great to explore some Torah, hopefully in a way that's meaningful to you and that benefits your life. Okay, so we're going to jump right in. Let me share my screen. Today is Wednesday, and today we're going to focus on the fourth reading. But I have here up the third reading, as you can see on the screen, just because I want to quickly recap the story that we explored at the end of yesterday's conversation, our bridge conversation yesterday. We talked about the daughters, right here, I'm highlighting it, daughters of, I don't even know how to pronounce it in English, but in Hebrew, Tzalafchad. The daughters of Tzalafchad. So Tzalafchad was a fellow who passed away. He had five daughters, no sons. As the conversation turns to apportioning, dividing the land of Israel, they're not in Israel yet. Moses is still around, and we know he's not going to go in. So they're still on the other side of the Jordan, but getting ready. And Moses is taking care of some of the preparation. So as they're throwing lotteries, lots, and casting, you know, figuring out who's going where. So we have these five daughters. What were their names? So the names were Mahla, Noah, Chagla, Milcah, and Tirzah. Those are the five daughters. I'm highlighting their names right there. I told you the Hebrew versions of their name. So those are the five daughters. They come before Moses and Elazar and the heads of the tribes and the people, and they basically say, we don't want to be left out of this division of the land. Based on all of the laws that had thus far been told to the Jewish people, the tribal division is patrilineal. It goes by the male, it goes by the head of household, it goes by the father, son, etc. That the paradigm. They said, look, our father passed away, there are no boys, you know, there hasn't been a discussion of this scenario. We fit in this category, but we don't want to just, you know, not say anything. We're speaking up. And if you look at such a powerful line over here, verse 4, and I know we did it yesterday, but I want to do it again. Why should our father's name be eliminated from his family because he had no son? That's a very strong language. Why should our father's name be eliminated? Give us a portion along with our father's brothers. It shouldn't just go to his male relatives, like his, you know, their uncles, his brothers. No, it should go to his children, us, the daughters. So Moses brings the case before God. We're going to jump in a moment into today's reading to see the response inside. But like I mentioned yesterday, one of the reasons why Moses takes the case to God and doesn't jump in, he could have jumped in and said, makes sense that the daughter should get, even though we haven't discussed it, but that's kind of like the obvious solution. But like I said yesterday, once they told him, they kind of indirectly flattered him by saying that although our father passed away, you know, early, nonetheless, he was not one of your enemies. So by saying that, they kind of, you know, engendered themselves perhaps to Moses. So he says, look, we got to go to God. Okay, so let's see God's response. Reading number four for today. So the Lord spoke to Moses saying, I love this. So Tzalafchad's daughters speak justly. Look at that. You shall certainly give them a portion of inheritance along with their father's brothers. And you shall transfer their father's inheritance to them. So as you divide the estate, things go to different family members, whatever, some of his siblings. But the bottom line is his children, his daughters, absolutely get his portion of the land. And then God says it's not just a one-time deal. It's not just, you know, they asked, so we'll hook them up. No. God says this should be a mitzvah for all time. Speak, verse 8, speak to the children of Israel saying, if a man dies and has no son, you shall transfer his inheritance to his daughter. By the way, one second, before we go further, the reason why it says if he has no son, it should go to the daughter is, again, I said this yesterday, but I said it quickly, very important. It's because, at least the understanding was, that the daughter would get married, and then she would be part of her husband's family and estate and inheritance. And so she would be getting a piece of the land amongst her husband's allocation. So the thought was, you know, boys would only get one, girls would get two. So therefore, only let the boys get, and then the girls, when they marry, they'll get the husband's allocation. But the Torah says no. If there's no son, then it does go to the daughter, which again sets up a scenario where she might be able to get two portions of the land, right? So if she's single, right, and she gets the daughter, and she gets the inheritance of her father, she'll also get the inheritance of her husband. So again, you have two different portions. And what happens, even more complicated, what happens if, there was a law prohibiting this for one tribe to marry into another tribe. Because what happens if now you have a daughter from the tribe of Shimon marrying a young man, when I say daughter, I mean a girl from the tribe of Shimon marrying a young man from the tribe of Reuven. So now she might inherit a piece of land here, and she's going to get also a piece of land there. So it just creates a little, you know, a little bit of not such a clean delineation or cut of the land. Now you're going to have portions that are mixed. You know, one family unit would have a piece of land in one tribe and in the other tribe. So again, it could create a little bit of confusion. Nonetheless, this is the law. So if a man dies and has no son, you shall transfer his inheritance to his daughter. Let's continue. If he has no daughter, no son or no daughter, you shall give over his inheritance to his brothers. So this is straight up Jewish inheritance law. If he has no brothers, you shall give over his inheritance to his father's brothers. If his father has no brothers, then you shall give over his inheritance to the kinsman closest to him and his family, who shall inherit it. This shall remain a decreed statute as the Lord commanded Moses. In other words, this is the law. Okay. The narrative now switches. So that closes the narrative of Tzelophehad's daughters. Don't worry, we're going to reopen it in a moment. But I even want to add one more thing before we reopen it. And that is that here we have another example. I mentioned this with regards to Pinchas, who the portion is named after, who, you know, when people didn't step up, even Moses didn't step up, Elazar didn't, he stepped up to the plate and he took it for himself, or he did it himself. And this becomes a common theme that we have in Torah. We've mentioned this in other portions, and here we have it again. And that is sometimes, you know, the rules aren't stated, but the reason why is because you're the one that's meant to write the rule, right? Or it's meant to be written through you. Moses says, I don't know, or I don't feel comfortable I'm answering. Bottom line is, a new law gets, or multiple new laws. I mean, all of these laws are only taught, you know, this the order of inheritance is only taught in response to Tzelophehad's daughter's demand for a portion of the land. Once again, we see about the value of stepping up, saying something, taking the initiative in order to create even additional mitzvot in Torah. Okay, the narrative now switches. It's still connected, but it switches to a conversation between God and Moses. A private conversation that we happen to know about because it's in Torah. But here's what God says. The Lord said to Moses, go up to this Mount Abarim. I don't know. I'll tell you the Hebrew is Har Ha'avarim. Mount Abarim. Okay. Go up to this Mount Abarim. Yeah, it makes sense. It works. And look at the land that I've given to the children of Israel. In other words, remember Moses, you're not going to go into Israel. So go up in the mountain range outside of Israel, and from that perch, look over the land. And look what he says. When you have seen it, you too will be gathered to your people, a euphemism for death, just as Aaron, your brother, was gathered. Basically, God is telling Moses, go up, take one final look at Israel, the land that you're not going into. I added that. But God did say that. And then you will pass away, just like your brother. Oh. No, God does say that. Because you disobeyed my command, God says to Moses, in the desert of Zin, when the congregation quarreled, when you were to sanctify me through the water before their eyes, by speaking to the rock, These were the waters of dispute at Kadesh in the desert of Zin. You didn't speak to the rock. The references, you hit the rock, and because of that, you failed to sanctify me through that action. Therefore, you're not going to go into Israel. The best you're going to do is look at Israel and then pass away. Moses spoke. So look at Moses. So that's what God tells Moses. Look at what Moses says back. Verse 15. Very, very emotional. Moses spoke to the Lord saying, "Let the Lord, the God of spirits of all flesh, appoint a man over the congregation who will go forth before them and come before them, who will lead them out and bring them in, so that the congregation of the Lord will not be like sheep without a shepherd." And essentially, what is Moses asking God, or asking of God? He's asking that God appoint a new leader over the Jewish people to take over once Moses passes away. In other words, don't leave this people like a sheep without a shepherd. Don't leave them. Don't leave it up to, you know, whoever fills that vacuum of leadership will take over. That's going to cause strife and quarreling and fighting and just tremendous, tremendous instability. We have to do this now during my lifetime to appoint the next leader so that there's a smooth transition and the people are having a leader. But the way that Moses describes the leader, going forth before them and coming before them, leading them out and bringing them in, there are so many commentaries that explain all of the nuances of Moses' request, the specific nature of the request of Moses. I actually spoke about it Sunday morning in our Kabbalah and Coffee class. One explanation, or many, many explanations given amongst the commentaries, but one is that a leader has to go before the people to lead them out, but also bring them in. In other words, a leader has to have a vision that's beyond the people, but also know how to relate to the people in a very real and a very practical way. So there's the value of being ahead of your time, but also being able to bring people, shepherd them, lift them up to reach that space, and not just, you know, be so far ahead that you're out of touch. Okay, so that's Moses' request is to God, appoint the leader. What does God respond? Verse 18, the Lord spoke to Moses. "No problem, your wish is my command. Take for yourself Joshua, the son of Nun, a man of spirit, and you shall lay your hand upon him. And you shall present him before Eleazar the Kohen and before the entire congregation, and you shall command him in their presence." In other words, don't make it a secret ceremony and write in a letter that to be opened after your passing that Joshua should take over. No, do this. It's not really transferring the mantle of leadership, but appoint the next leader during your lifetime in front of the people so that everything is above board and or clear and obvious. "You shall bestow some of your majesty upon him so that all the congregation of Israel will take heed." Right? If you give this person, if you're the one appointing, they're going to take him seriously. So make sure that you're doing it. "He shall stand before Eleazar the Kohen and seek counsel from him through the judgment of the Urim before the Lord." Interesting. What he's saying is that the next leader, Joshua, should work with Eleazar the Kohen. And when he has a question, he should ask Eleazar, who is the high priest, he should ask him to consult the Urim v'Tumim, the breastplate. There was a plate, a gold plate, square plate, that was worn around the chest of the high priest. There was like a chain that was holding it up, and he would wear it on his chest, and it had 12 stones corresponding to the 12 tribes, and each stone was engraved, letters on each of the stones, the name of the tribe associated with that stone. Each tribe had a stone, had a color, and their name was engraved on that. And when he had a question, when the Jewish people had a question, like a serious question, not like what's for dinner, but like a real question, right? So they would consult the high priest, and he would consult the Urim v'Tumim, and the letters would light up that formed the response from God. So kind of like, a very cool light up response system that was miraculous. Okay, so basically, the Joshua should be consulting with Elazar the Kohen through this method. By his word they shall go, and by his word they shall come. He and all Israel with him, and the entire congregation. In other words, this leader should really be a leader. Moses did as the Lord had commanded him, and he took Joshua and presented him before Elazar the Kohen and before the entire congregation. He laid his hands upon him. That was kind of like a symbol of conferring, you know, some sort of, you know, blessing, power, you know, putting the hand on the head of the other person. And he commanded him in accordance with what the Lord had spoken to Moses. In other words, he gave him those instructions as God told him to give to Joshua. That now, by, you know, just when you read the story, it sounds great. It sounds wonderful, touching, meaningful, you know, a little bit disappointing for Moses. But you ain't seen nothing yet, because the commentaries say there's a whole drama beneath the story. What's the drama? When Moses asks God, let the Lord appoint the man over the congregation, who does he have in mind? Not Joshua. Who do you think he has in mind? His son. His son. Moses had two sons. And Moses wanted at least one of his sons to take over from him. In fact, the commentaries say, and I'll show you Rashi in a moment, Rashi says this. The commentators explain that that's exactly why Moses requests this from God right now in the story, in the narrative. What's it following immediately? It follows immediately the story of Tzelophehad's daughters. The story of a man who dies, and his daughters are doing what? They're inheriting their father's place. They're taking over from their father. Moses says to God, God, you're giving Tzelophehad's estate, legacy, to his daughters. Do the same for me. Give my legacy to my children and let them take over from me. Understand the connection? And what does God respond? Good idea. We do need a leader, but it's not going to be your son. Not going to be your sons. It's going to be Joshua. Why? I think I mentioned this last week or in a previous class or some other context. Because these, when it comes to Torah, it's not hereditary, necessarily. If you study, then you're a scholar. If you don't put in the effort, it doesn't work like inheritance. It doesn't work like, you know, inheriting an estate. It's not like getting a piece of land like Tzelophehad's daughters. It's a little bit more complicated than that. I'm going to show you Rashi's commentary. Really, really powerful. Look at... Another juxtaposition. Rashi does a lot of this, explaining why one story follows the other. I'm going to make it a little bit bigger so we all can see it easily and clearly. Okay, take a look. When God says to Moses, go up in the mountain and look at Israel, because you ain't going there. Rashi asks, why is this passage juxtaposed here with the previous passage? Why is God suddenly telling Moses to go up on the mountain and look at Israel? But you're not going in. So when the Holy One, blessed be He, said, you shall certainly give them the inheritance, the daughters of Tzelophehad asked for a piece of the land. And God says, absolutely, give it to them. So Moses said, the omnipresent God commanded me to allocate the inheritance. Perhaps the decree has been annulled and I will enter the land. When God says to Moses, yeah, give them the land, Moses thinks, maybe I should be actually giving them the land once we get into the land. So maybe God changed his mind and I am going in. So therefore, God says, no. I know what you're thinking. I'll let you see the land, but you're not going to go in. My verdict still stands. The Holy One said to him, my decree remains as it was. Let's continue. Let's continue. I want to show you the other Rashi that I mentioned. Okay, so when Moses requests a new leader to be appointed, here's a very beautiful lesson. This verse comes to let us know the virtues of the righteous. For when they are about to depart from the world, they disregard their own needs and occupy themselves with the needs of the community. When God tells Moses, when God iterates to Moses that he will not enter the land he is going to pass away before. So Moses immediately thinks about the people and he says, at least according to this explanation, and he says, God, you got to take care of the people. He's not thinking about his own mortality. He's thinking about what the people will need. So that's a beautiful lesson in and of itself. Okay, here it is. This is what I mentioned before. Again, about Moses' request. When Moses heard that the omnipresent God told him to give Tzelophehad's inheritance to his daughters, he said, it's time to ask for my own needs, that my son should inherit my high position. The moment God says to him, give Tzelophehad's daughters their father's inheritance, Moses says, I need to now ask for my own family. The Holy One, blessed be He, said to him, that is not my intention. For Joshua deserves to be rewarded for his service, for, quote, he would not depart from the tent of study of Moses. This is what Solomon meant when he said, he who guards the fig tree eats the fruit. I love that line. He who guards the fig tree. I told you to guard the fig tree, not eat it. Okay, whatever. But if you're hanging around the fig tree, you're going to be inevitably eating from its fruit. And you deserve to eat from its fruit if you're investing in it. Joshua invested in Moses, invested in Torah study, invested in the whole experience of the tent. In other words, the tent of Torah. And therefore, he deserves to be appointed the next Torah leader. Yeah? It's powerful. It's powerful. God, Moses was disappointed. Or, I don't know, I can't. We might imagine that Moses was disappointed. He wanted his son to inherit his position. God says no. Okay, so what are the lessons that we can extract from today's conversation? Number one, like we started in the beginning, the daughters of Tzelophehad teach us the power and really the importance of not being passive, but asking for what you need, asking for what you think is right, demanding what you think is right, and getting that done. Because of them, we have this whole series of verses that talk about how inheritance is meant to flow if a person doesn't have sons, etc. All of that is attributed to Tzelophehad's daughters. They could have said, we'll wait and see. No, they took initiative, and that's always a good thing. Lesson number one. Lesson number two. When we spoke about the aftermath of the story of Tzelophehad's daughters, so we mentioned that, you know, Moses says to God, God says to Moses, time to go up in the mountain. You might think that I've changed my mind. I've told you to give, you know, allocate portions of the land to these people. It's not you directly. It's going to happen after you pass away. So again, the idea of clarifying, not letting, you know, thoughts or doubts linger. If you know somebody has a misunderstanding, it's always good to clear it up right away. The longer you let it schlep, it just becomes more disappointing or more complicated, more confusing, more heartbreaking. It's always better to clear up miscommunication or misconceptions, even if it's a difficult conversation. So God says to Moses, right away, right after Moses starts thinking, maybe, God says, look, I'll let you see, but you're not going to touch. You're not going to go there and actually put a foot on the ground in the land of Israel. Okay. Then we have the notion, the idea that Moses is requesting from God that his son, okay, if he can't go in, at least maybe his child, his son, should take over the mantle of leadership. And God responds, no. It's going to the one who invested in this. It's going to Joshua. And once again, like I mentioned before, many times, but also recently, the idea that that Torah goes to those who, the figs of Torah, I think it was figs, go to those who guard it, who guard the tree. And finally, Moses asks for a leader who gets the people and who the people will get. Somebody who's not only a visionary, somebody who has a strong sense of leadership, but somebody who, or a strong sense of, you know, where to go, but also knows how to get the people there, get the people on board. Because if you have a leader that's too far ahead, it doesn't do anything for the people. People are stuck behind and it ends up being a disaster. So it's very important to have the right leader to lead a people, especially in a critical time as this was, the transition between desert life and Israel life was a very, very critical juncture. And Moses asked for a leader that would shepherd them in that process. And of course, God responds, yes, Joshua, and let's take care of it now during your lifetime. Let's appoint him as a leader. Once again, clarity is key. It's so important to have clarity and not leave doubts, not leave confusion, not have all of these other factors linger. God ensures that the people know very clearly who the next leader is going to be. Moses himself appoints him. God himself, you know, approves it. And that's it. No questions. It's very simple. Very clear, which is good. It's good to have. The Talmud says there's no joy quite like the resolution of doubts, right? When you have a question, when you have a doubt, it can be very agonizing. So it's good to know. It's good to have clarity. God gives Moses clarity. Moses gives the people clarity. It's always good to have clarity. All right, that's it for today. Those are the lessons that I wanted to share with you. Any questions, comments? Feel free to unmute yourself. No? It's okay. All right. Great to see you guys. See you tomorrow. Same bad time, same bad channel. Daily Power Parsha. Tonight we have Torah studies, and we're going to learn how to dance to the rhythm of the moon. That is tonight, the moon dance. Tonight at 7:30, Torah studies. If you're wondering what in the world I'm talking about, you have to join us tonight at 7:30 or catch the replay on YouTube or on SoundCloud. All right. See y'all later. Take care.
Thank you.
Pleasure. You too. You too. Have a wonderful day.
Bye.
Take care.
See you later.
Bye.